And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 14, Preacher Showdown. By William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Schill. With performances by Terrence Azelford, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Eric Mesner, Bobby Azelford, Andy Clements, Michael Glenn, Kate Torrey, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Scott McCormick, Karen Carbone, and M.B. Van Dorn. Civilization stank. As the man called Preacher paddled the canoe down the Mississippi River, he scented St. Louis before he ever came in sight of the settlement, sprawled along the west bank of the stream the Indians called the Father of Waters. The smell was a mixture of wood smoke, tannin hides, boiling lye, rotten fish, burned meat, and a hundred other less pleasant aromas. But then, Preacher reckoned that after months in the wilderness, he was no fragrant flower himself. And the plumes piled up in front of him and behind him in the canoe didn't smell too good neither.
Well, I'll be rid of the plumes soon enough. Sell them first thing when I reach the settlement. When I can find a place to stay, maybe soak in a tub full of hot water. Of course, some folks claim it's flat out unhealthy to bathe too often. The way I see it, sometimes fellas just gotta live dangerously.
Preacher was a tall, rangy man, although his height wasn't too evident while he was sitting in the canoe. His broad shoulders and muscular arms strained at the buckskins he wore and revealed the power in his body. His long, thick hair was black as midnight, save for a few silver strands, as was the bushy beard that concealed the lower half of his rugged face. His eyes, shaded by the broad brim of his felt hat, were dark and deep-set under prominent brows. His face and hands were tanned to the color of old saddle leather. He was in his mid-30s, having been born as the 18th century turned to the 19th. He was no longer considered a young man in that day and age. Preacher's active outdoor life and iron constitution gave him the strength and vigor and attitude someone a hell of a lot younger. Preacher had spent the previous spring trapping and had a good load of plumes, so he thought it would be all right to make a trip downriver to sell them, then head back up the Missouri for the fall season. Shit! Preacher's long-barreled flintlock rifle lay across the canoe slats in front of him. He put the paddle down and snatched up the weapon. He figured the bushwhacker on the riverbank would have moved as soon as he fired that first shot. The question was, had he gone right or left? One guess was just as likely to be correct as the other, so Preacher followed his gut and aimed just to the left of where he had seen that puff of powder smoke. Somebody was taking off for the tall and uncut over yonder. Preacher figured it was the varmint who had tried to shoot him.
Damn pirate.
Preacher reloaded the rifle and placed it back in the bottom of the canoe, in easy reach in case he needed it again. When he picked up the paddle, he started back in with it. A number of keel boats and steamboats were tied up at the docks extended into the Mississippi from the settlement's waterfront. Not being fond of crowds, Preacher headed for shore before he reached that point. A chunky boy about 10 years old, wearing a coonskin cap, watched with great interest as the tall, raw-boned, buckskin-clad man dragged the canoe full of pelts onto the shore.
Howdy, son.
Are you a mountain man, mister?
You betcha.
Are them guns loaded?
Yeah, they sure are. Wouldn't do me much good if they weren't. Happen I should need them now, would they?
Nah, I reckon not. You ever shoot any Injuns?
I've been known to, but only when they didn't give me no other choice. I've been good friends with a whole heap of Redskins, too.
My pa says all Injuns are bad. He says they're all heathen savages.
Well, I reckon that's because he ain't never met the right ones. Injuns just like any other kind of folks. Some of them are the best friends you'll ever find, and some are just low-down skunks. You do well to remember that, younger. You know a gent named Joel Larson?
I know who he is. My pa works in the fur warehouses.
Would you do me a favor?
Sure.
Go on down to the docks and find Mr. Larson for me. Tell him that Preacher's waiting up here with a load of plues to sell to him.
You're the fella they call Preacher?
Yeah, last time I looked anyway. Run along now.
Yes, sir.
The youngster turned around and ran toward the docks and warehouses along the waterfront. Preacher sat on a tree stump and waited. A short time later, the boy returned, and following him was a dark-haired, mustachioed man in a swallowtail coat and beaver hat.
Preacher, I didn't expect to see you for a few weeks yet.
Well, trapping was good.
Preacher shook hands with Joel Larson. Then he waved a hand toward the canoe full of pelts.
Reckon you can see that for yourself.
Indeed I can. I'll look the furs over and make you an offer.
Over the next quarter of an hour, Preacher and Larson conducted their business, settling on a mutually agreeable price for the furs.
I'll have to meet you tonight to pay you, but if it's all right with you, I'll get some men up here with a wagon right away to load those pelts and get them in the warehouse.
That's fine by me. You ain't never given me any cause not to trust you.
And I certainly don't intend to start now. Where should I look for you?
I'll be at Fargo's Tavern.
I'll see you later, then. You'll keep an eye on those pelts until my men pick them up?
Won't let them out of my sight.
It took another half an hour for Larson's men to arrive with the wagon and start loading the furs. During that time, the boy called Jake pestered Preacher with seemingly endless questions.
Where are you going now, Mr. Preacher?
Well, I got some other things to do, and I done told you, boy, just call me Preacher. Ain't no need for the mister.
My pa says I ought to respect my elders, and you're pretty old.
Old, huh? Well, I'll see you later, all right?
Can I come with you?
No, you run on back to the docks. Where I'm going ain't for youngsters.
Where's that?
You know what a tavern is?
Oh, you're gonna get drunk and find yourself a whore.
What the hell? Excuse me. What the blazes does a young fellow like you know about things like that?
I know a lot. I listen when folks talk. Grown-ups don't always pay as much attention to what they're saying around kids as they should.
Well, for your information, I ain't looking for no whore. And I don't plan on getting drunk.
Why not? Don't you like whiskey and women?
Good God almighty.
Jake! Come on, boy!
Shoot, that's my pa. I reckon it's time for me to go home for supper. Be seeing you, Mr. Preacher.
Sure thing. And quit calling me mister.
I got a good look at him through the spyglass before you took that shot at him. That's the son of a bitch who put a rifle ball through my arm, all right. I got a score to settle with him.
The two men stood behind a run-down shack not far from the river's edge, peering furtively around the corner of the building. They had been watching for the past half hour or so as the dark-bearded mountain man waited for Joel Larson's men to arrive. The tall, sandy-haired one with the prominent Adam's apple wore buckskins and a floppy-brimmed felt hat. The shorter, stockier man was dressed in a shabby black suit and a gray shirt that had once been white. A battered beaver hat was crammed down on his mostly bald head. He had a dirty rag tied around his upper left arm to serve as a bandage. Blood had soaked through the rag in one place, leaving a small crimson stain. Both men had gaunt, beard-stubbled faces and narrow, hate-filled eyes. Earlier in the afternoon, they had been perched in some brush along the western bank of the river, about a mile north of the settlement, waiting for some pilgrim to come along who looked well-heeled enough to rob. The mountain man had certainly filled the bill with that canoe loaded with furs. If the tall man, Skylar Mims, hadn't missed with his shot, the mountain man would be dead now, and Skylar and his partner, who went by the name of Colin Fairfax, would be selling those furs to Joel Larson. Instead, Skylar's aim had been just a little off. The same couldn't be said of the mountain man's aim. His return shot had nicked Fairfax in the arm as he and Mims were trying to get away from the riverbank. The ball hadn't actually gone through his arm, as he'd said, but rather it grazed it, knocking out a tiny chunk of flesh. During the ride back down here to St. Louis, Fairfax had vowed that he would find the man and get even with him for what had happened. The fact that the mishap had occurred while the two of them were trying to murder and rob the mountain man didn't seem to mean anything to him.
No money changed hands. Larson's probably going to meet him later and pay him then.
In that case, the wisest course of action would be to follow him, wait until our quarry has the cash in hand. Then we'll relieve him of it. And of his life, too, of course.
Preacher had told Jake the truth. He wasn't looking for a whore. But a whore did find him, and he wasn't quite sure what to do about it. Buxom redhead named Abby perched on his lap now. She was being stubborn about getting off. Preacher had put away about a fourth of a jug of whiskey and a couple of thick steaks during the time he'd waited at Fargo's for Larson. He wasn't drunk, but the who hit John had caused a pleasant glow to spring up inside him, like the warmth from a campfire on a chilly night. And the steaks filled his belly. All of it combined to make him a mite drowsy. Then Larson arrived and gave him a small leather pouch that was heavy with gold coins. They had shared a drink, and the fur company man had gone on his way. Preacher had already told Fargo, the tavern owner, he wanted to rent one of the rooms on the tavern's second floor for the night. He'd also asked the tavern keeper to haul the big wash tub up there and see that it was filled with hot water. Fargo had agreed, knowing that Preacher was scrupulously honest, and was good for any debts he incurred during his stay in St. Louis.
Oh, now, just hold on. Hold on.
I just want to show you some loving, Preacher.
Yeah, I reckon we might just get around to that. But first, though, I told Fargo to haul that old wash tub of his upstairs and fill it with hot water. How'd you feel about getting in there with me?
Well, that sounds like just about the dandiest thing I ever heard. We can wash each other.
All right, but... You gotta get off of me first.
Abby stood up and took Preacher's hand, eager to get on with the bath now that he had suggested it.
Come on!
Preacher stopped at the bar.
Excuse me, Mr. Fargo, I was wondering if that tub of hot water was ready yet.
Ford Fargo nodded.
Yep, that boy of mine just got through hauling the last two buckets of hot water up there. It's ready for you, Preacher. I ain't sure why you'd want to do such a thing, though. I hear that washing too regular ain't good for you.
Well, it's been months since the last one. I reckon I'll chance it.
Preacher allowed Abby to tug him toward the stairs. When they reached the room he was renting and went inside, he saw curls of steam rising from the water in the big wooden tub.
Let's get these duds off and get in that tub.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Skylar Mims and Colin Fairfax had followed the mountain man to Fargo's tavern. They hadn't been close enough that afternoon to overhear the conversation between the mountain man and Joel Larson, so they hadn't known where he was going and had to trail him. After he went into the tavern, they loitered across the street and waited for Larson to arrive with the money they were sure he'd be bringing to pay for the pelts. Dusk was settling down over the riverfront town when Skylar nudged Fairfax with an elbow.
Ain't that the kid who was talking to the mountain man earlier?
Yes, I believe it is.
Why don't you talk to him? Maybe see what he knows about that fella.
You think it might help?
Can't hurt.
All right, stay here.
Fairfax strolled out into the street, seemingly just idling along. He came to a stop next to the boy and looked down at him as if he'd just noticed that the youngster was there.
Hello, lad.
Hey, mister.
Say, didn't I see you earlier talking to a friend of mine down by the river?
You mean Mr. Preacher? He's a friend of yours, mister?
Yeah, yes, that's right.
The boy pointed to Fargo's tavern.
That's where he said he was going. I heard him tell Mr. Larson, so I reckon he's in there, if you're looking for him.
Well, perhaps I'll get together with him later. We're old friends, but we haven't seen each other for a long time, so I'd like to surprise him. If you see him, don't mention that you spoke to me, all right?
Sure, mister. I don't reckon I'll be seeing him, though. My pa will be mad enough at me for slipping out after supper like this. He'd tear my hide good if he ever caught me sneaking into a tavern. He says that good, God-fearing folks don't never venture into such places.
How does one know which places to avoid if one never visits them?
Huh?
Never mind, lad. Run along.
The boy hurried away through the gathering shadows. Fairfax went back across the street to rejoin his partner.
I found out our quarry's name.
What is it?
Preacher.
Oh, lordy. We better forget about it, Colin. Even them red savages don't mess with Preacher most of the time. He's all wolf and a yard wide.
He's just a man like any other. And he shot me, damn his eyes. I have a score to settle.
Yeah. And once Larson brings his money for them plews, he'll have a considerable amount of cash on him, I'm thinking. I ain't sure it's worth getting killed over, though. There's other ways to make money.
Preacher's never seen us before. We can walk right in there and he won't have the slightest notion that we've a grudge against him. It's just a matter of waiting for the proper time to strike. Any man can be defeated if he's taken by surprise by an enemy who's ruthless enough.
Well, maybe.
I'll go after him myself if I have to.
Nah, don't take on like that. We've been partners for a good while, Colin. I ain't gonna desert you now. We'll take him. Let's go on in and see what he's doing.
They started across the street, but stopped as they saw Joel Larson approaching. Drawn back into the shadows, they waited while the fur merchant entered the tavern. Larson wasn't inside for long before he left again.
He must have paid Preacher off for those pelts. That's what we've been waiting for.
Preacher was sitting at a table in the corner with a fleshy, red-headed young woman in his lap when the partners came into the tavern. Skyler and Fairfax went to the bar and spent the last of their money on a couple of drinks they could nurse along for a while. A short time later, Preacher and the whore went upstairs, pausing at the bar to speak to the proprietor for a moment. From the overheard conversation, the two men learned that Preacher was about to take a bath. That was good, because it meant that he'd be naked. That wasn't exactly the same thing as unarmed, but at least he would have to take off his weapons and put them aside before he climbed into the wash tub.
We can't just go traipsing upstairs. Fargo rents them rooms out. And if we start up there, he'll holler after us and try to make us pay.
I recall seeing some stairs in the rear. We'll make our entrance that way. Come on.
They hurried around the building. Full night had fallen by now. They had to find the back stairs in the dark. They came to the stairs and began a slow, careful ascent. They reached the door at the top of the stairs. The two of them found themselves in a narrow corridor with doors on both sides. The hallway was lit by a single candle stuck on a shelf at the far end, where the landing for the main staircase was. Thick shadows cloaked this end of the corridor. Fairfax motioned for Skyler to take the lead. Skyler hesitated, then grimaced and started walking carefully along the hall, staying close to the wall. He paused at each door he came to and pressed his ear to the panel. Finally, at the third door on the right, he motioned for Fairfax to follow.
I can hear him splashing around in there. Sounds like they're having a fine old time.
Fairfax reached under his coat and drew out a short-barreled pistol.
It's about to get finer for us.
Preacher just luxuriated in the heat. Soak away all the aches and pains he had stored up in his lanky body during the long months spent in the wilderness. Abby did a lot of kissing and playing around. The preacher was almost too tired to really get into the spirit of the thing. He was thinking about telling her that they ought to consider postponing the rest of their get-together until the next night. Heard a floorboard creak in the hallway outside the door. The preacher sat up a little straighter in the tub and took his hands off Abby's heavy breasts. He reached for the butts of the pistols on the nearby chair instead.
What's wrong, honey?
Abby was shot twice in the back. She was thrown forward by the horrible impacts, crashing against Preacher, who was trying to stand up. Preacher rolled to the side. There was nothing to shoot at, Preacher realized. The two intruders were already gone. They must have realized that to stand around and try to reload was to invite certain death at his hands. As he leapt to his feet, he saw Abby draped over the side of the wash tub. She had fallen to her knees and then pitched forward so that the upper half of her body dangled outside the tub and the tangled strands of her long, wet red hair hung down and brushed the floor. Preacher had seen the extent of the terrible wound she had suffered, and he knew she was dead. Ignoring the fact that he was still naked, Preacher lunged toward the door and slid out into the hallway. Movement from the stairs caught his eye. He saw a beaver hat disappearing down the staircase and almost snapped a shot at it, but he held off on the trick.
They're gonna pay.
Preacher broke into a run toward the stairs. He didn't know who the men were, and he didn't really give a good goddamn. It killed Abby and tried to kill him, and he was gonna settle those scores if he could. Skidding a little because his feet were wet from the water dripping off his body, he reached the top of the stairs. The tavern's patrons had heard the shots, and then they had seen the two murderers rushing out. Now a tall, mostly pale, completely naked gent with long hair and a beard came charging down the stairs with a pistol in each hand. The people in the tavern got the hell out of his way in a heartbeat. Preacher ran out into the street. St. Louis was pretty dark after nightfall. The light that came from the doors and windows of some of the buildings furnished the only illumination. Preacher spotted the running figures ahead of him as they passed through a rectangle of light that spilled from an open door. They were in sight only for a second, not long enough for him to draw a bead on them. He kept on running. Suddenly, something sledgehammered into Preacher's head. He went backwards as if he had just run into a wall. One of the men he was pursuing had reloaded on the run. Skylar Mims and Colin Fairfax paused in the stygian darkness of an alley.
I shot him.
Are you sure? You shot him?
I saw him go down. How could we have missed him? With all three shots in the tavern.
We couldn't have known that bitch would get in the way. And then I never saw anyone move as fast as Preacher did when you tried for him again. It was just bad luck all the way around.
Especially for that whore.
Yeah, that wasn't our fault. Preacher took her up there, not us.
Well, what do we do now?
What do you mean?
Preacher's liable to come after us.
Well, you shot him, remember?
Yeah, but I don't know if he's dead. I got a feeling he takes a heap of killing.
Come along.
Fairfax led the way toward the far end of the alley, which was marked by a faint glow from the street.
Even if he's still alive, I doubt that he's got a good look at us. He doesn't know who we are, so we don't have to worry about him finding us. In fact, we could make another try for him.
Not hardly. We've tried to kill Preacher twice, which is probably one more time than most folks ever get the chance to try. I ain't going after him a third time.
Yeah, I suppose it would be best to avoid the man from now on. But we gotta do something for money. We're almost flat broke now.
Well, we could go see Shad Beaumont. He's always looking for good men.
Yeah, Beaumont's a dangerous man.
Well, hell, so are we, ain't we?
All right, we'll go see Shad Beaumont. And even if that bastard Preacher is still alive, with any luck, we'll never see him again.
Preacher was alive. His head hurt too damn much for him to be dead.
Disgraceful. Utterly disgraceful. Why, he probably came straight from some harlot's bed before passing out in his besotted iniquity. Shameful.
Preacher pushed himself up into a sitting position.
Oh, shut the hell up, why don't you, mister?
Several people were standing nearby in the street. One of them carried a lantern, and even though its light was dim, Preacher squinted because it seemed like a glare to his eyes. His head spun dizzily from sitting up, but it settled down after a few seconds. There were four men and two women standing there, all of them soberly dressed in dark clothes, probably on their way to or from a prayer meeting, Preacher figured. And almost certainly, they hadn't expected to run into a naked man along the way.
Are you folks blind? Can't you see I've been shot?
Oh, dear. I do believe he is hurt. We have to help him.
Oh, he was probably injured in some drunken brawl over a woman of ill repute, Martha.
That doesn't matter, Walter. The Lord said for us to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. The Good Samaritan stopped to help without asking who that poor man was or what had happened to him.
Ma'am, I appreciate the sentiment. I surely do, but I'd be obliged if you and the other lady would move along and let your men folks give me a hand. It'd be more fitting and proper.
Nonsense. Let me help you up.
Dizziness got to him again for a second, causing him to sag against her. He put a hand on her shoulder to steady himself.
Here now! Stop that! Good heavens, sir, have you no shame?
I'm sorry, ma'am. I was a mite out of my head there for a minute. Didn't mean to give no offense.
That's quite all right. How badly are you injured? Do you need us to take you to a physician?
Preacher felt of the wound on his scalp again. It was a short, shallow furrow where the pistol ball had barely grazed him. That had been enough to knock him down and make him pass out for a few minutes, but that seemed to be the extent of the damage.
No, I reckon I'll be all right. That shot just nicked me, and this old skull of mine is pretty darn thick.
At least take my husband's coat.
What? Martha, you can't just offer my coat to this reprobate.
Preacher's head felt steady enough now for him to bend over and pick up his pistols. As he straightened, he saw Walter peeling off the long black coat.
Oh, now we're being robbed. Here, take the coat. Just don't hurt any of us. I implore you, sir.
Oh, I ain't stealing your goddamn coat. You can come down to Fargo's Tavern anytime you want and get it back. I'll leave it with old Ford.
That's all right. I would never set foot in a place like that.
Lord God. Look, you wouldn't happen to have a little boy named Jake, would you?
Preacher shrugged into the barred coat. Walter was built sort of stout, so the garment hung pretty loosely on him, but it was long enough to cover the essentials.
What? I don't have any children.
More's the pity.
Yeah, well, night, folks, and thank you, ma'am.
Preacher started back toward Fargo's, the tails of Walter's coat flapping around his legs. Preacher felt pretty foolish walking into the tavern that way, but even though some of the patrons looked mighty hard at him, nobody snickered. In fact, an air of gloom hung over the place, and Preacher figured out why as a couple of men started down the stairs from the second floor, carrying a blanket-shrouded shape. Preacher looked over at Fargo.
Hi, Abby Fargo.
Yeah. I reckon you knew she was dead when you went chasing out of here after those fellas. They the ones who shot her?
Yeah, that's right. They were aiming for me. Abby just happened to be in the way.
Damn shame. She was a fine gal for a whore. Hell, she would have been a fine gal even if she hadn't been a whore.
Did you get a look at the two bastards who done it?
Yeah, but I never paid much attention to them. Think I'd seen them somewhere before, but I ain't sure about that. And when they ran out of here, they were moving so fast and everything was so confused, I didn't even get a good look at them then.
Carrying his pistols, Preacher went back upstairs. Small puddles of water still lay on the floor of his room where they had splashed out of the tub during the ruckus. Preacher grimaced at the sight of them, tossed the long black coat on the bed, and began pulling on his buckskins. When he was dressed, he returned to the tavern's main room and asked all the other customers about the two killers. Nobody had really gotten a good look at him, but the questioning confirmed that the taller man had been dressed in buckskins, and the smaller one wore a beaver hat and a black suit that had seen better days. Those descriptions didn't mean anything to Preacher, and they were vague enough that they might have fit almost anybody. He had to wonder if the two men would try again to kill him. He hoped so. Preacher was looking forward to making their acquaintance over the barrels of his guns. The main room of the tavern was empty except for Ford Fargo, who leaned on the bar sipping from a steaming cup of coffee.
Pour me one of those, would you?
Abbey's service will be later today. Couldn't find a minister who was willing to say words over a gal like her, so I figured on doing it myself. Unless you'd like to do it. You got the name for it and all.
No, you knew her a hell of a lot longer than I did, so any speechifying that's to be done, you should do it. Besides, I ain't a real preacher.
Hell, if I was, I ain't sure I'd claim it. Don't the good books say we ain't supposed to judge other folks? I figure Abby deserves to be laid to rest proper, but all the church-going folks just turn their noses up at the idea. Good thing we got a public cemetery here in St. Louis now. They can't stop me from burying her there. I'd reckon she'd like it if you was there.
Why? Because I'm the one who got her killed?
You don't know that.
Yeah, I do. Those bastards were after me. I just don't know why yet or who they were, but I'm gonna find out.
I'll bet they're not even here in the settlement anymore. If I tried to kill you and botched the job, I'd be running as far and as fast as I could.
And it wouldn't do you any good.
Yeah, that's what I'd be afraid of.
Well, I don't figure on staying here in town any longer than I have to. Bad things happen in towns.
Preacher spent the morning visiting one of the general stores and telling the proprietor what he wanted. The The man promised to gather the supplies together and have them ready whenever Preacher wanted to pick them up. Then Preacher went to the office of the fur company where Joel Larson worked.
Preacher, I heard about what happened. Sorry about the girl. Why do you think those men attacked you?
I don't know. I made a lot of enemies in my time. Also, somebody took a shot at me while I was still on the river yesterday afternoon about a mile north of the settlement. Could be that whoever it was made another try for me.
Well, here's another possibility. They might have seen us strike a deal for your pelts, or they could have been in the tavern when I paid you. It's possible that they were just thieves after your money.
I reckon you could be right. I don't know for sure what those two fellas looked like, but I got an idea. I wanted to know if maybe you'd seen him around.
Preacher gave Larson as good a description of the killers as he had. The fur company man listened carefully, but he shook his head when Preacher was finished.
Sorry. That doesn't ring a bell. There are probably hundreds of men in St. Louis wearing buckskins or shabby suits and beaver hats.
Yeah, I know. But I'll find them. I aim to settle the score for Abby. I ain't overly fond of letting gents get away with shooting at me, neither.
Well, good luck to you, Preacher. If there's anything I can do to help, let me know.
Yeah, sure will.
Everyone in St. Louis who was of the less than honest persuasion knew Shad Beaumont, or at least they knew of him. Schuyler Mims and Colin Fairfax didn't have any trouble finding the man, who was rumored to have a finger in every criminal pie in the region. They just asked around in the dives and whorehouses until a grossly overweight madam with henned hair pointed upward with a fat thumb.
Yeah, Shad's upstairs with two of my girls right now.
Two?
Yeah. Shad's got what you call a well-developed appetite.
Downright greedy's what I'd call it.
Maybe, but I wouldn't call that to his face. Not if you want to keep on breathing. Now, could I interest you boys in some female companionship? Best-looking girls in town, and they're all clean as a whistle, too.
Thanks, but we'll just wait for Shad.
Not in here, you won't. This is a classy place. I can't have bums loitering in here.
Come along. The street's still public.
Yeah? Well, just don't clutter up my doorway. I got customers who want to get in and out.
Indeed.
Fairfax motioned for Schuyler to follow him, and he left the building. They took up a position across the street and hoped that Beaumont wouldn't be inside the whorehouse all damn day. The man had to tend to his business sometime, even a criminal. Schuyler and Fairfax were both tired. They had slept in an alley behind one of the fur warehouses, since they couldn't afford anything better, and the night hadn't passed restfully for either one of them.
You watch for Beaumont. I'm going to keep an eye out for the Preacher.
He doesn't know where to find us.
Yeah, but he could come ambling along the street and recognize us by pure dumb luck. We don't know how good a look he got at us.
It couldn't have been much of one. Look, the room was full of powder smoke, and that redheaded girl was between him and us.
Yeah. I sure am sorry about what happened to that gal.
It was an accident. We can't be held responsible for an accident.
Yeah, but she'd still be alive if we hadn't tried to kill and rob Preacher.
Now, you can't be sure about that. The next customer might have slit her throat or beaten her to death. Whores get killed all the time. There's no point in wasting any sympathy on them.
Yeah, I reckon you're right.
An hour dragged by before a big man with a close-cropped brown beard came out of the brothel across the street. He wore a dark suit and a fancy vest and a beaver hat, and the summer sun glinted on the stick pin in his cravat. Before Fairfax and Mims could intercept Beaumont, a couple of burly men in rough work clothes moved swiftly to get in front of him. Fairfax had noticed them in the street earlier, and had even considered the possibility that they were waiting to talk to Beaumont too, but now he realized they were Beaumont's bodyguards. Fairfax stopped short and held up both hands, palm out.
Please, gentlemen, we mean your employer no harm. We just wish to speak with him on a business matter.
What sort of business?
My partner and I would like to work for you. It's said that you're the sharpest man in St. Louis.
Well, if that's true, I didn't get that way by hiring just any broken-down bums who come stumbling along wanting a job now, did I?
We're not bums, and I wish people would stop referring to us that way. We're good men, smart and able to follow orders.
And we can take care of ourselves.
Huh, is that so? Well, we'll just see about that.
Beaumont made a curt gesture again to his bodyguards.
Boys, hand these two their needins. If they live through that, then we'll see about finding jobs for them.
Preacher headed for the fur warehouses. After doing some thinking, Preacher remembered the boy Jake that had helped him with his clues the previous day. He had seemed like a curious little cuss. Preacher had a mind to try and find Jake to see if maybe he had heard anything regarding the two assassins that had tried to kill him. The boy had said that his father worked at one of the fur warehouses. The preacher figured he would ask around until he found the boy's pa. Then the fella could tell him where Jake was. It took him a while to find the right place, but at the fourth warehouse, a raw-looking man pointed out one of the other workers who was bundling up dried pelt so they could be loaded on a riverboat and shipped back east.
I think Jonathan over there has a boy named Jake.
Much obliged.
Preacher walked over to the man called Jonathan, who was a dark-haired, dour-faced gent with the heavy muscles that working in a warehouse gave a man. He scowled at Preacher as the mountain man came up to him.
You need something, mister?
Yeah, I'm looking for a little fellow named Jake. About 10 years old, I'd say. Got brown hair, sort of a round face. He's mighty inquisitive. He likes to talk.
Sounds like my boy. What do you want with him? What you done wrong? If he's stolen from you or done something else sinful, I'll thrash him within an inch of his life.
No, nothing like that. I just want to ask him a couple of questions. You seem like a right nice little varmint, if you didn't mind the chattering.
He's like all children, full of sin. You have to steer them onto the right path as forcefully as you can. You have any children, sir?
Well, not that I know of.
Don't make light of the Lord's commandments, sir.
I didn't know that it was. Look, I just want to talk to your boy. If you'll just tell me where to find him, I'll go on and I won't bother you no more.
I don't know where the little scoundrel is. But if I was a wagering man, I'd say he's getting into trouble, wherever he is.
But you ain't a wagering man, are you?
Of course not. It's
sinful, yeah.
Are you making fun of me?
I'm just tired of getting a sermon instead of answers. And even though it ain't none of my business, I ain't too fond of the way you've been talking about the boy. He seemed like a pretty good kid.
He's my son. I'll talk about him and deal with him any way I see fit.
Yeah, one of these days he's liable to run off, too.
He wouldn't dare. He knows he'd pay dearly for such an unholy act of defiance.
With a disgusted shake of his head, Preacher turned away from the man. A powerful hand clamped down on Preacher's shoulder.
Wait a minute. If you think I'm going to tolerate such a show of disrespect from a reprobate who's probably as big a heathen as those filthy redskins you no doubt consort with...
Mister, I'm going to give you one more chance to quit acting like such a miserable human being. Now, you may talk fancy and think that you and the Lord are on such good terms, but to me, you ain't nothing but a bag of hot air.
You can't talk to me like that, you sinner!
Now, that ain't very Bible-like. I got some scripture for you, mister. God helps those who help themselves.
Suddenly sensing that he was being watched, Preacher turned and saw Jake standing just inside the door of the warehouse, silhouetted against the light from outside. The youngster's eyes were wide with shock and amazement as he stared at Preacher and the unconscious form of his father.
Now, Jake?
The boy whirled around and dashed away.
Oh, God damn it!
It was pretty obvious Jake had seen Preacher knock his father out cold. No wonder the kid was scared of him. The streets of St. Louis were busy this morning, as they nearly always were. Jake had quickly lost himself in the crowd along the waterfront. Several riverboats were tied up at the docks, and passengers were loading and unloading. Workmen carried cargo off the boats and loaded other cargo. Jake could be anywhere. It would be just blind luck if he found the boy now.
Hell, we might as well get on to the burying.
One of Shad Beaumont's bodyguards was a big man with a bald, bullet-shaped head and an ugly grin, made even uglier by the gaps. Several teeth had rotted out, or had been knocked out. The other man was equally large and sported a thatch of rust-colored hair and a handlebar mustache of the same shade. Both smiled in anticipation as they closed in on Skylar Mims and Colin Fairfax. It was like they hadn't beaten anybody to death for a while, and they were looking forward to it. But as Baldy swung a sledgehammer punch at Skyler and Handlebar grabbed for Fairfax, the intended victim started back with surprising speed. Skyler smacked home a punch into the bald man's face. Blood spurted from Baldy's crushed lips. Meanwhile, Handlebar was still trying to get his hands on Fairfax, who danced away from each lunge with speed and agility. As Handlebar rushed forward again, Fairfax leaped to the side and stuck out a leg. Angered by being hit, Baldy rushed at Skyler, swinging his fist in wild, flailing blows. Skyler bobbed and weaved, peppering Baldy with swift blows that struck like a snake. Meanwhile, Fairfax rushed forward while Handlebar was still on the ground and got a hold of the man's arm, twisting it behind his back in a wrestling move. That shriek of agony distracted his bald-headed companion, who looked over to see what was happening at just the wrong time. Skyler's fists were blurs as he hammered him into Baldy's already injured face. The big bodyguard went flying backward to sprawl senseless in the street next to Handlebar, who was clutching his dislocated shoulder with his other hand.
Was that enough of a demonstration for you, Mr. Beaumont? We told you we can take care of ourselves.
I'd say you damn sure can. I wouldn't have guessed that anybody could handle those two bruises like that. Can you shoot?
We're expert shots.
All right. I reckon maybe I can use you after all.
Skyler waved a hand toward the fallen bodyguards.
What about those two? I ain't sure we want to work for you if they're going to be holding a grudge against us. I don't want to spend my days and nights having to watch my back for fear of them trying to get even with us.
Oh, don't worry about that. Their services are too valuable for me to dispense with them, but I'll give strict orders that there won't be any reprisals. They followed my orders, and you two gents just defended yourselves. There's nothing there for anyone to be angry about. Do you have any problem with following orders?
You just tell us what to do, boss, and we'll do it.
Even if it's against the law?
I reckon if we didn't figure on breaking the law, we wouldn't have asked you for a job in the first place.
No, I suppose not. All right, you're hired. I have a job in mind where I can use the two of you, if you're interested.
Oh, we're interested, all right. Now, just tell us who you want killed.
Abby's funeral at the public cemetery on the outskirts of the settlement was surprisingly well attended. Ford Fargo was there, of course, and so were the half-dozen girls who worked at his tavern. Fargo had closed the place down for the funeral, an indication of just how highly the tavern keeper thought of Abby. In addition, several roughly dressed rivermen were there at the cemetery. They were probably tavern customers who had been with Abby and were fond of her.
All of us will miss Abby. We had a smile and a kind word for just about everybody. She was one sweet little gal, that's for sure. Lord, some would claim that folks like us don't have any right to ask any favors of you. But I recollect what it says in the good book about how when your son was down here on earth, he spent quite a bit of time in places like mine, talking to folks like us. I'm hoping that you'll bear that in mind when I ask that you have mercy on poor Abby and let her into your house up there in heaven. She may not have been what folks would call a good girl, but I can promise you there wasn't a smidgen of evil in her. She had a good heart. Amen.
Amen. Fargo picked up a handful of dirt from the pile of it beside the graveyard and dropped it onto the casket. The preacher lingered while the others said their goodbyes, then departed. After a few minutes, only he and Ford Fargo were left standing beside Abby's grave.
Did you have any luck finding those bastards who done this?
Afraid not. Didn't turn up anybody who knew them.
That skinned up knuckle of yours looked like you might have asked the question sort of emphatically.
Yeah, one fellow took exception to telling me what I wanted to know.
I bet he was sorry he did that.
I wouldn't know. He was sort of quiet when I left.
At least Abby got a proper send-off. I think that's important. I hope wherever she is, She knows we done all we could for her.
I reckon she does.
Excuse me. I'm looking for a man called Preacher.
Preacher turned and saw a man in tight gray trousers and a black swallowtail coat standing there, holding a beaver hat. The man was about Preacher's age, clean-shaven, so that it was apparent he had a rather heavy jaw. His hair was dark and thick. There was nothing of the frontier about him, but he was sturdily built, as if he had done at least some hard work in his life.
I'm Preacher. What can I do for you?
I hate to intrude on your grief, sir, but it's rather important that I talk to you. My name is Corliss Hart, and I have a business proposition for you.
I already sold the load of plues I brought in to Joel Larson.
I don't want to buy your furs. I'd like to hire you.
To do what?
I'm in need of your services. I should say, my cousin and I are in need of your services.
The services as what?
As a guide. I'm told you've performed such a function in the past.
Yeah, not always of my own choosing.
We're prepared to pay you, of course. And I think you'll find that my cousin and I can be quite generous.
Well, it ain't a matter of money. I got things to do here in St. Louis.
Well, our wagons aren't leaving for a few days yet. Perhaps that would give you time to conclude whatever business you have here, and then you could go along with us.
Wagons? Now, you ain't talking about immigrant wagons, are you?
No. Jerome and I are businessmen, not colonizers like Stephen Austin down in Texas. We have 6 wagons full of supplies that we brought out here from Chicago. We plan to travel to the Rocky Mountains, find a suitable location, and set up a trading post. We need an experienced man not only to guide us, but also to advise us on the best location for such a business venture.
Well, sorry. I might be done by the time you're ready to leave, or I might not, so you'd best find somebody else.
Are you sure? We were told that no one knows the mountains and the area between here and there better than you do. And we were also told that you're probably the toughest man between the Mississippi and the Pacific Ocean.
I wouldn't know. I ain't fought everybody between the Mississippi and Pacific Ocean. Leastways, not yet. Just give me time.
You won't reconsider?
Nope.
Might as well give up, mister. Preacher's the stubbornest man on the frontier, that's for sure.
I reckon I'll take that as a compliment.
Very well. If you change your mind, we're staying at the Excelsior Hotel.
All right.
Hart turned and trudged back toward the main part of the settlement, putting his hat on as he did so.
That fella looked like he had plenty of money, Preacher. Job might have paid pretty well.
Time enough to worry about that after I've settled the score with the 2 skunks who gunned down Abby.
Once you sink your teeth into something, you don't let go easy, do you?
Not hardly.
Preacher spent the rest of the day circulating through the waterfront tavern, and there were plenty of them along the river. In each place, he nursed a beer and bought drinks for anybody who was willing to talk to him and answer his questions. But he didn't find anyone who recognized the admittedly vague description of Abby's killers. Irritated by his lack of success, Preacher headed back to Fargo's place.
Hey, Preacher. I've been looking for you.
Good Lord, son, I've been looking for you, too. I reckon we must have just kept on missing each other.
Preacher stepped over to Jake and placed a hand on the boy's shoulder.
Look, I'm sorry you had to see that ruckus between me and your pa this morning.
I'm not. I was glad to see you whoop him like that. I couldn't believe it at first. I ain't never seen anybody knock him down before. But he had it coming. He thrashes me all the time on account of I'm sinful, he says. Seems like beating on somebody smaller than you would be just as sinful as anything I ever done. Maybe even worse. I reckon I hate him.
Oh, you don't want to go talking like that about your own pa.
Why not? It's true.
Well, maybe what he does to you ain't right, but I'm sure it's because he loves you and thinks that's what he ought to do to help you grow up proper.
Yeah, but it don't make it hurt any less when he takes a strap to me.
If that's the way you feel, how come you run off like that?
It made me feel so good I was ashamed of myself. I mean, a boy ain't supposed to like it when he sees his own paw being whipped, is he?
I guess it depends on the circumstances and how that paw treats his boy.
Yeah, I finally decided that too. So then I figured that I ought to come find you and thank you for what you've done, and ask you a question.
What sort of question?
Are you going back to the mountains?
Yeah, not right away, but sooner or later I will.
When you go, can I go with you?
Go with me? To the mountains?
Yeah, I'll make a good partner if you just give me a chance. I can pull my own weight, I swear. I know how to shoot a rifle already, and I'll bet if you teach me, I could learn how to handle a beaver trap quick. I'm pretty smart, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, I'll bet you are, but that don't mean you're ready to go to the mountains. Hell, you ain't but, what, 10 years old?
I'm 11, nearly 12.
Well, that ain't anywhere near old enough.
How old were you when you left home, Mr. Preacher?
Now, doggone it, quit calling me mister. And it ain't any of your business how old I was when I went out on my own. I was older than you are now. I can tell you that much for damn sure.
It ain't fair. If I stay here, my pa's just gonna beat me worse and worse. He'll be mad because you whipped him. And he'll take it out on me from now on.
Well, maybe I need to have another talk with him and let him know that wouldn't be a good idea. I reckon he might listen to me.
Yeah, for a while, because he'd be scared of you. But you said so yourself, Preacher. You're going back into the mountains. And once you're gone, Pa won't be scared no more. And then he'll thrash me within an inch of my life if I do the least little thing wrong or do something he considers a sin. And you won't be anywhere around to stop him.
I tell you what. I'll take you to see a friend of mine named Ford Fargo.
Is that Mr. Fargo who owns the tavern down by the river?
Yeah, that's him. Maybe he could hire you to give him a hand around the place. If he does, he might find a place for you to sleep.
You mean I could live in a tavern?
Well, yeah.
Where all those nice-looking women work?
Hush now. You're too young to be concerning yourself with things like that.
Keeping a hand on Jake's shoulder, Preacher steered him toward the riverfront.
Now I got a question for you.
I ain't sure I ought to answer it, seeing how you won't let me go to the mountains with you.
Well, you can go back to your pa if you want to.
No. What does he want to ask me, Preacher?
Yesterday when I got to the settlement and was making my deal with Mr. Lawson to buy my furs, you were watching pretty close, right?
Yeah. You were carrying a rifle, two pistols, a knife, and a tomahawk. You looked about as savage as an Indian.
Uh-huh. Did you notice anybody else watching me and Larson?
You mean like somebody skulking around like an Indian?
Yeah, okay, like an Indian, yeah. Like that. You see anybody?
Sorry, Preacher. I don't recollect nothing like that.
These fellas I'm talking about, one of them was tall, wearing buckskins, and the other one was, he was shorter, had on an old suit and a beaver hat.
Nope, I just didn't see him.
All right. I'm obliged to you anyway for answering the question.
The tavern was already busy when they reached it. Dusk was settling down, and men who had finished their work for the day were eager to quench their thirst and maybe play a little slap and tickle with the serving gals. Nobody paid much attention to Jake when the Preacher took him inside. While it wasn't that common to see a kid in a tavern, neither was it unusual to come across somebody Jake's age guzzling down a shot of whiskey. Preacher brought Jake up to the bar.
Who's your friend?
His name's Jake.
Well, I'm mighty pleased to meet you, Jake. What are you doing associating with an old scoundrel like Preacher here?
Preacher's going to teach me how to be a mountain man.
Now, dadgummit, I never said anything like that. Jake's got some crazy idea in his head that he was going back to the mountains with me, but I never said he could. I thought maybe you could find a place for him here, Ford.
Here at the tavern, you mean?
Yeah, got to be some chores around here he could do to pay for his grub and a roof over his head.
There's always plenty of work around the place, that's for damn sure. I might could use a boy to help out. Where are you from, son?
Right here in St. Louis.
Is that so? You got kin folks here?
Just my pa, Jonathan Brandt. He works in one of the fur warehouses by the river. You wouldn't know him, though. He'd never set foot inside a tavern. He says they're all dens of iniquity, whatever that is.
Sorry, Preacher. I can't take the boy.
Oh, why not?
You heard him. He's got a pa right here in town. Hell, the fella works just a few blocks away. If I kept the boy here and he found out about it, he'd have the law on me, sure as shooting.
Well, you heard what Jake said. His pa wouldn't ever find out because he'd never come in here.
Somebody might recognize the boy and tell his pa he's here. Then I'd be liable to be thrown in jail for child stealing. Nope, I'm sorry, Preacher, but I can't do it.
All right, Ford. Now what in the blazes am I going to do with you?
Take me to the mountains with you.
Shed Beaumont's house on the southern edge of town was one of the nicest dwellings in St. Louis, as befitted his status as the leading figure in the settlement's criminal underworld. The big whitewashed building had two stories and columns holding the porch roof over the front door. The place reminded Schuyler Mims of some plantations he had seen down in Louisiana, although not quite as fancy, of course. Beaumont's illicit activities had made him well-to-do, but he wasn't as rich as those cotton planters down south yet. Beaumont brought Schuyler and Fairfax to the house after sending his two battered bodyguards off to seek medical attention for their injuries. Baldy and Handlebar had glared at Schuyler and Fairfax before limping off together, helping each other hobble along the street. But Beaumont again assured his two new associates that no one would seek reprisals against them. Now he led him into a well-furnished parlor that looked fancy enough to Schuyler to have come out of a high-class whorehouse.
Would you gents like a drink?
That would be fine, thank you.
Brandy?
Whatever you're having.
Beaumont poured amber liquid from a decanter into three crystal snifters that had to have come from New Orleans. He handed one to Fairfax and another to Schuyler, then raised his own.
To our new association, gentlemen.
Hear, hear. You said something about having a job for us.
Yes, of course. Several wagons were ferried across the river from Illinois yesterday. I was curious about them, so I asked around. I have quite a few sources of information about what goes on along the riverfront.
I'll bet you do.
There are half a dozen wagons in the party. They're loaded with all sorts of supplies and trade goods, and they're owned by a pair of cousins named Hart, Corliss and Jerome Hart.
And you've got your eye on those wagons and the goods inside them.
That's right. I've discovered that the Harts plan to head west with their little wagon train and establish a trading post somewhere in the mountains.
What about engines? Ain't there a bunch of engines out there that'd like to scalp and kill white folks just for the fun of it?
Not all savages are hostile, or at least that's what I've heard.
That's right. If you know which areas to avoid, you're relatively safe from Indians. Some of the tribes are even willing to trade with white men. And with the fur industry continuing to grow, more and more trappers are heading west. A trading post like the one the Hart cousins want to establish could do a lucrative business.
But you plan on taking those wagons and all the goods in them.
Exactly. There's no reason why I shouldn't reap the profits from that trading post. But I'll need a couple of good men to run the place.
You want us to do that?
I think you can handle the job from what I've seen of you so far. Some of my men would be working with you, of course.
How do we know we can trust you?
We'll have to trust each other. The arrangement will be of benefit to all of us, so none of us will have any reason to double-cross the others. Besides, there's something else you'll have to do before I turn such an important operation over to you.
What's that?
You'll be in charge of getting the wagons and their cargo in the first place. That means you'll have to kill Corliss and Jerome Hart, and everyone who's traveling with them. Can you handle that?
Schuyler looked at Fairfax. Taking a pot shot at a fella in a canoe on the river was one thing. So was accidentally shooting a whore. Carrying out cold-blooded murder on at least half a dozen people and probably more, well, that was something else entirely. Fairfax looked like he was up for it, though, so Schuyler nodded. Fairfax grinned and tossed back the rest of his brandy. He held out the empty snifter for a refill.
Let's drink to success, shall we?